Call this hearing of the Senate Community Regional Affairs Committee to order. It is now 2 o'clock on Thursday, April 4th, 2024. Members present are Senator Gray Jackson via Teams, Senator Bjorkman, and myself, Chair Dunbar. We do not have a quorum to conduct formal business, but we can still take presentations. And so that's what we're going to do. Before we begin, I would like to thank Juliana Singh, the Senate Community Regional Affairs Recording Secretary, and Joseph Giesbrecht from the Juno LIO for staffing the committee today. We had three items on our agenda: HCR 8, honoring Vietnam War veterans, by Representative Shaw. Unfortunately, because we do not have a quorum in present, we cannot move that bill out today. So that will be held over until our next meeting. And let me see if there's anyone. There's no one online to testify to that, so that's all right. Next, we are going to hear an overview on the Local Boundary Commission by Sandra Mahler, the Director of Community and Regional Affairs Department. And finally, we may have an introductory hearing on SB 174, Honor and Remember, Honor and Sacrifice Flags, but we are still working through something on that. SB 252, Senator Kawasaki's Arbor Day bill, was removed from our schedule at the request of the sponsor. Okay, so we're going to move past HCR 8, and we're going to move to Local Boundary Commission overview. Do we have Director Mahler? Here we go. Okay. Director Mahler is online. We also have online Jebediah Smith, Government Specialist of Division of Community and Regional Affairs, who's available for questions. So, Director Mahler, would you please put yourself on the record and begin your presentation?
Yes, thank you, Chair Dunbar. I appreciate the opportunity to speak before the committee. For the record, this is Sandra Mahler. I am the Director of the Division of Community and Regional Affairs in the Department of Commerce. So again, I do appreciate your willingness to hear this foundational topic of governance in the state of Alaska. As mentioned, I do have Jedediah Smith as our subject matter expert. He is the staff to the Local Boundary Commission, and should questions get beyond my knowledge, I will lean to him as a lifeline. And just to ask, would you like to take questions at the end or throughout? And either is fine with me.
I think, how many slides is your presentation?
19.
Okay, then we will take questions intermittently throughout.
Okay. All right. I believe is there somebody there to advance the slides? Starting on slide 2, wanted to start with the where it all began, which was the Alaska Constitution. As you see, Article 10 does mention the Local Boundary Commission. And we've done some historical research and looking at some of the comments and discussion that was held during the Constitutional Convention. And there was a strong belief in not having to have local governance at the local level, and that the state have broad interest. That being said, the Local Boundary Commission was created, and that was to advance the broad public interest in establishing and altering municipal governments. The Alaska Supreme Court, in an early piece of case law, has upheld the notion of the LBC, that the LBC should decide these matters of statewide interest. The advantage of doing this method is that it lies in placing the process at a level where area-wide or statewide needs can be taken into account. By placing authority in a third party, arguments for and against boundary change can be analyzed objectively, which I think is a key thread of the Local Boundary Commission on a statewide basis. So if you proceed to the next slide, please, slide 3. This is a slide of the map of Alaska and the four judicial districts. There is one person appointed from each of the districts, and the chair is appointed from an at-large seat. So that could be anywhere from within the state. And also, I want to point out that each commissioner represents the entire state, not just their judicial district. The purpose is to get geographical diversity and also to form an independent objective board that can take into account local as well as statewide interests and needs. I know there's been some discussion on composition of the Local Boundary Commission, and I wanted to provide the committee with a few statistics. For the last 12 of the last 37 years, two LBC Local Boundary Commission seats were filled by members from the unorganized borough. In 27 of the last 37 years, at least one seat on the LBC has been filled by a resident of the unorganized borough. Well, it's not a prerequisite. We find it helpful for if members have a working knowledge of or experience with municipal government. Also important to note that is our volunteer positions. And don't see any questions. If there's, if we can go to slide 4, please. So that was the Local Boundary Commission. This slide represents the types of local governments that are within Alaska. As you can see on the table, there's a type and then an example to the right of a, for example, a home rule city is City of Cordova. And I will, through the presentation, go through actions by the Local Boundary Commissions that would determine these. Of additional note, there are 11 home rule cities, three of which are in the unorganized borough. That would include Cordova, Valdez, and Nenana. There's also 18 first-class cities, 13 of which are in the unorganized borough. And the first-class cities in the unorganized borough are required to operate school districts. There are 211 second-class cities. Those in the unorganized borough are prohibited by law from operating schools in the school district. So that hopefully gives you a sense of the types of government held in Alaska. If you'll move to slide 5, please. And this slide represents the powers of boroughs, and there are three mandatory area-wide powers. One is they must have a borough school district. They also shall assess and collect property sales and use taxes, and they will also provide for planning, platting, and land use regulations. So next slide, please. I thought it would be helpful to provide the committee with a summary history of borough formations in Alaska. The first one was created in 1961. That was a local petition. The communities in that area requested and ultimately was approved to have a borough in the Bristol Bay Borough, which is currently in existence. Then in 1963, they had the Mandatory Boroughs Act, and you could see the list of the mandatory boroughs that we created. And then after 1968, the list shows all of the boroughs that were created. They were not mandatory. They were served under a petition. And currently, the Local Boundary Commission is drafting a preliminary report for a potential 20th state borough in the Hoonah district. Let's see, next slide, please, slide 7. And this is a map intending to give the committee a sense of the breadth and depth of the unorganized borough. It covers about 60% of Alaska's landmass, yet contains about 10% of its population. And I think it's also important to note that I think one of our convention founders or others in the past several years mentioned that land does not vote. So you're not you're voting by people. And that the concern of ours is if we have a member from the LBC from the unorganized borough, it does reduce the potential pool down to about a pool of 10% of the population. So that's giving you a sense of the breadth of the unorganized borough as well as the population. Next slide, please, number 8. And this shows our regional education attendance areas. As many know, these are essentially, the state of Alaska doesn't have counties, but federal programs and others want to categorize land areas similar to what they do at counties. We work with federal agencies frequently. Things such as the PILT and forest receipts are ways for federal funds to get allocated across regional areas. There are actually 19 regional education attendance areas, and there are school districts for these are the school districts for the unorganized borough. So each REA has its own administration, its own school board, elected from the communities within its boundaries. All REAAs are funded entirely by the legislature, since second-class cities are prohibited from operating a school district. All right, so now I wanted to get into some of the types of actions that we can see and give some examples. Page 9, if you go to that, types of boundary changes and how we work with changing a boundary. LBC is, again, currently considering the Huna Borough Incorporation Petition. It's typically a year-long process. The LBC also just recently approved the City of Tanana's request to reclassify as a second-class city. It was a new process that was signed into law last session, and it streamlines the process, but it also removes the consideration of the best interests of the state from the process. So again, these are the types of boundary changes, and I'll go through each one. The first one on page 10 is any boundary change is mentioned similar to what Huna is doing, is in just the basic incorporation. And that's where you have an unincorporated community, they want to become a municipality, and they work through the process to establish a city boundary and rules and a charter for what they want to be governed by. The last city that was incorporated, the LBC considered and ultimately approved, was Whale Pass in 2017. The next slide, page 11, is annexation. And this is where a municipality adds additional lands to its boundaries, as shown in the graphics. The last annexation the LBC considered was from the city of Sabotna in 2020. That is currently awaiting a Supreme Court decision on the appeal of the LBC's action regarding the petition. The Sabotna annexation petition was through the legislative review method. During its deliberations, the LBC converted the petition to a local action method. So we are awaiting Supreme Court decision on that ruling hopefully this year. The next slide is 12, is a detachment. And that's the graphic also shows you have a full municipality, part of it wants to leave, and then you have a new L-shaped version of the boundary. This is fairly rare. Back in 2015, I believe the North Slope Borough was detached to form the Northwest Arctic Borough in 1985, excuse me. And then also in 2015, the city of Fairbanks detached a 48.5-acre parcel. So it's fairly rare, but it has occurred.
Can I pause you there for a second?
Oh, certainly.
So I know that, I think this is what Eagle Exit wants to do with the Eagle River Chugiak area. Have they submitted a petition, or what step in the process are they on? Do you know? Does maybe Mr. Smith know?
Yes, Chair Dunbar, we have not received a petition from the Eagle Exit petitioners. We have been working and communicating with them. We've gotten what's called a document for technical review, in which Jedediah Smith would provide technical comments on the areas that would need additional improvement. And Jed, would you like to add anything further on the Eagle exit petition?
Hi, this is Jedediah Smith, staff to the Local Boundary Commission. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I don't have a lot to add. We have, as Director Mahler, through the chair, as Director Mahler said, we have been in regular discussion with them, and they have submitted some draft information to us, but nothing has been submitted for filing with the LBC.
Can I ask the, just so long as I have you here, and it's an interesting topic, there's been questions about things, you know, there are municipal assets in that land that has, you know, received a lot of investment throughout the years. So, for example, AWU, the water utility, both the reservoir and the purification facility and all of the pipes that come out of it, that runs through where Eagle Exit is proposing to have this new community. The landfill also, and this, the Anchorage's landfill. So when the Local Boundary Commission considers and the department works with them to have a detachment like this, what happens to those assets?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a very good question. And what I can say about this particular example that we're discussing, and at this point it is kind of a hypothetical, but the detachment and incorporation that they are discussing is one that is incredibly complicated, and I don't have a clear answer. I mean, it is something that they are required to consult with the existing municipality. So in other words, the municipality of Anchorage, they're required as part of their petition to submit a transition plan that would include these details. And you can imagine the level of detail that we're talking about is quite great. I have not yet seen that information yet or those details. I don't know if they're ready to move forward with those yet. So I can't speak to what they're proposing, but I can tell you that the LBC will consider all of those factors as part of this.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Well, we'll move on then. Director, if you want to go on to your next slide, I think it's dissolution.
Again, this is Sandra Mahler with Director of DCRA, and I'm on page 13. And this slide represents a dissolution. And they are also very rare. It has recently been used when forming a new borough government. Example, Skagway, Wrangell, and Petersburg are the most recent examples, with a city dissolved in lieu of either a unified or non-unified home rule. There were a number of state-initiated dissolutions in the 1990s from a handful of cities that became inactive, basically years of inactivity rather than only a few months, and the department is required to do a thorough investigation prior to recommending this action to the Local Boundary Commission. So there have been a couple of instances where a city is formed and later, they decide that they do not want to be a borough, so they dissolve their – I'm sorry, they don't want to be a municipality, so they dissolve that. Right. On to the next page, page 14, is a reclassification. And again, this is – the example we're going to use is Canada, where they went from a first class to a second class city. This is very rare to have it downgraded to a second class city. A first class city adopting a home rule charter is not an LBC process. So a city can do this on their own through a vote of the residents. Moving on to the page 15, a unification, and a good examples of this, as you look at the diagram, is the municipality of Anchorage, the City and Borough of Sitka, City and Borough of Juneau, City and Borough of Wrangell are the only unified home rule boroughs in Alaska. Moving on to 16, and these last couple, those are the types, and the last three slides are basically some of the process that the LBC considers. And as we know, boundary incorporation, municipal governance is a very serious matter. So it's not a fast process. It is a process that we have outlined in statute and regulations on what is the actual process. But it typically involves three main opportunities for the public comment. The first comes right when there's a petition that is accepted for filing. The second time is right after the preliminary report, and that's where we currently are with HUNA. We've had the first, we've accepted the petition. We are working, staff is working on the preliminary report, and once that's delivered to the local boundary commission, then there will be chance for a public to comment on it. And the third and basically final comes during a public hearing where the commission will be in the community and the boundary, a community within the boundary that's being proposed. There'll be public testimony received during that process. And again, this next slide, 17, is the role of the LBC staff. And I won't read that to you, but it's pretty self-explanatory. And it's an area where we are asked questions as were just discussed with the Eagle Exit effort, and also to the local boundary commissioners themselves. And our final slide is on the other kind of the what does the LBC staff do, and importantly what we don't do. So we get a variety of inquiries. We do produce a report for the local, for the legislature every year, report of activities. We also report on if any boroughs or municipalities were incorporated. So that's something you will get on an annual basis. Importantly, we do not keep ordinances for municipalities. We don't keep their amended charters, and we don't track their land surveyors, and all of those, if we get questions on those, we refer those to the local municipality as they are the most up-to-date on the activities within their boundaries. So that, Mr. Chairman, is our overview of what the local boundary commission is made up with, what its rules are, and some of the types of actions that it considers. I'd be happy to answer any questions from anybody online or the committee.
I'll ask one quick question. So I believe there was, we have a piece of legislation in before us at this committee now. And I believe it is motivated in part out of concern for a recent petition or a plebiscite that was held. Can you speak a little bit about what happened there?
To the chair, I'm not sure I'm following what your question was. Was it the last local boundary commission meeting where there was additions to the agenda?
Well, I'm not sure. You mentioned the HUNA borough action. But I think there was another action, and where it is escaping me, but that sort of motivated, or at least is the context in which this bill to change the composition of the local boundary commission was introduced. So I guess my question is, have there been any controversial actions in the last year or so?
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And of course, would say that the controversial would need to be defined, as these are there are many things to be upset about, either for or against or neutral. as far as there are legislation, I think that's why I wanted to start the presentation with where we started with the Local Boundary Commission and uh-huh. trying to look at what the founders thought and how they set up our constitution, how we would be working to working through these as the state grows and as we evolve over the course of 50 plus years. And I think the way the current statute is listed, there is the representation, as I mentioned, with some of the four judicial districts and an at-large. And I believe that perhaps the change you're referring to is to have that fifth member be specified from a certain location. And I can't speak to the sponsor on their motivation. Again, I think it's important to remember or to note that each commissioner represents the entire state. They don't only represent their judicial district. I think that's one of the points of confusion. And the second thing is that if that the fact would be if this bill is passed as proposed, you would be reducing the potential pool of these volunteers fairly drastically from the entire state population to about 60,000 and going.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you. Are there any other questions for the commissioner? I don't see any from Senator Gray Jackson either. So thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate the presentation. And yeah, we'll take a brief pause. We'll set up for the next bill. SB 174, Honor and Remember, Honor and Sacrifice Flags, sponsored by Senator Bjorkman. Today we'll hear a brief introduction and sectional explanation from the senator and his staff, Laura Ace, who I think is also a vexillologist, is that right? And we will hold invited in public testimony on the bill. Senator Bjorkman, if you would like to please introduce yourself and your staff and begin your presentation.
Thank you very much, Chair Dunbar and esteemed members of the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. For the record, my name is Senator Jesse Bjorkman, representing the northern and central portions of the Kenai Peninsula. Senate Bill 174, Honor and Remember, Honor and Sacrifice, is the recognition of the two flags behind Ms. Ace and I as state symbols that honor the service of those who have served our armed forces and their country, as well as those that have served their community as first responders. The loss of a family member is difficult, made even more difficult when that person was lost in the line of duty. Senate Bill 174 would create state symbols that can be displayed to recognize the sacrifice of those lost in the line of duty while serving in the U.S. Armed Forces, or as a police officer or firefighter, and their families. While monuments and memorials have been built to recognize those who lost their lives in the service to their country or community, fewer than 5% of Americans will ever see them. Creating the Honor and Remember and Honor and Sacrifice flags will provide an official emblem that recognizes with dignity and respect those that had offered the greatest sacrifice, as well as ongoing loss that their families must endure. 27 states have adopted the Honor and Remember flag as their state symbol of recognition for military service members that have died in the line of duty, protecting and defending our liberties. Senate Bill 174 designates in state law that the forms these flags must take, as well as where they may be flown. Implementation of the bill would not create additional costs for the state of Alaska, and it designates when and where the flags may be displayed, but does not require the state offices to do so. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, for your consideration of this bill.
Thank you, Senator Bjorkman. Ms. Ace, do you have a sectional analysis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Laura Ace, staff to Senator Jesse Bjorkman. Section 1 of SB 174 adds a new section to Alaska Statute 4409097 to designate the Honor and Remember flag as an official symbol of the state to recognize and honor members of the Armed Forces of the United States who have died in the line of duty and their families. It also designates the design of the flag and designates when and where the flag may be flown. Section 2 of the bill similarly adds new language to statute AS44.09.099 to designate the honor and sacrifice flag to recognize and honor police officers and firefighters who have died in the line of duty and their families. Both sections include language giving the Commissioner of Administration authority to adopt necessary regulations, and both sections stipulate that a public employee may not be required to report to work solely for the purpose of displaying the flag in order to ensure that there is no additional cost to the state of Alaska of this legislation.
All right. Thank you very much. It looks like we have, well, first of all, Senator Gray Jackson, do you have any questions before we go to invited testimony?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. All right, so now we have Mr. David Caswell, head of the Alaska Chapter of Honor and Remember. Mr. Caswell, would you like to put yourself on the record and begin your testimony?
Yes, I would. Thank you very much, Chair Dunbar. My name is David Caswell. I'm a 27-year Coast Guard retired chief petty officer, a 15-year office manager for the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, and a 13-year director of the Honor and Remember of Alaska chapter and an ambassador to the state of Texas. In our over 247-year history as the United States, there have been 1.3 million military deaths in the line of duty or because of the duty they served. Honor and Remember was established on Memorial Day 2008 as a national organization dedicated to the dignified memory of our fallen military. The Honor and Sacrifice flag was first presented on the 15th anniversary of 9/11 in remembrance of fallen first responders, firefighters, law enforcement, EMTs. Nationally, Honor and Remember has presented over 5,000 personalized Honor and Remember flags to Gold Star family members in recognition of their sacrifice and the life lost of their loved one. In Alaska, I have presented 21 Honor and Remember, personalized Honor and Remember flags to family members. Through my efforts, I have received 5 veteran service organization adoptions, 3 fraternal organization adoptions, 2 civic organization adoptions, 2 boroughs and 2 cities, or 6 cities in the state of Alaska and Texas. Nationally, we have over 36 organizations that are considered as corporate sponsors and do things annually, monthly, weekly, or daily in regards to Honor and Remember. Some of those organizations that you might be familiar with: NASCAR, Goodyear, Spartan Nash, Sargento, Norwegian Cruise Line, Geico Insurance, and USAA, just to name a few. Honor and Remember was a conception based on the death of Tony Lutz, who died December 2005. His family was notified on the 30th of December of that year. And like most families that received those 5 words from military representatives, "I regret to inform you," they began a trek of despair, agony, and remorse. George Lutz, Tony's father, looked around, visiting other military families that had lost loved ones, and realized that there were 2 major concerns for all of these Gold Star families. 1, is that the sacrifice of their loved one would not have been in vain. Two, that sacrifice of their loved one would not be forgotten. As he looked around, he tried to find symbols that recognized that honor and sacrifice of those families, and he could not find anything. As a nation, we are a nation of flags. We have the United States flag. All states have a flag. All military organizations and sub-organizations have a flag. Veteran service organizations have a flag. Colleges have a flag. Everywhere you look, somebody has a flag. But in our 247-year history, our nation has never come up with a single symbol to recognize the sacrifice of our military men and women. Thus, the Honor and Remember flag was conceived. Because of that, I am asking that the state of Alaska, in support of their House Joint Resolution 53 of 2010, which urged the national adoption of the Honor and Remember flag, that we should now adopt the Honor and Remember flag as a state symbol so that we can show the families that are left behind that their loved one is not forgotten and that their sacrifice is appreciated. Because of the freedoms that we enjoy daily, they paid the cost. If there's any questions, I would be glad to try to answer them for you.
Thank you, Mr. Caswell. Senator Gray Jackson, do you have any questions?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Nor do I. So thank you very much, Mr. Caswell. We appreciate your testimony. At this time, I'm going to open public testimony. See if there's anyone in the room. It's not heavily attended today. See if there's anyone online. I'm not seeing anyone. Is there anyone online? No one online. Okay. We're going to close public testimony. Maybe we could hold those up for LV. Can we hold them up so LV can see the flags? And I'm trying to think, what angle is her view? It's towards them, right? So let's hold each of them up.
Yeah, just move a little bit closer, Senator Borkman. a little bit more. Wow, that's beautiful. Now let me see the other one. That's beautiful. Excuse me, Mr. Caswell. That's really nice. Thank you, Senator Chairman Dunbar, for sharing those with me. Thank you.
Thank you. If you guys want to put those down, thank you very much.
Something I'd like to add to that presentation there.
Go ahead,
is that
Mr. Caswell.
The personalization of those flags is putting on the member's rank, name, date, and place of death so that they are personalized.
So that gets to my next question for the sponsor. So two things here. So the bill lists the time, the places, and the days that they may be displayed. Does that imply that on other days they may not be displayed? I mean, obviously a private citizen can always display these whenever they want. They're the First Amendment right. But is the state bound to only display it on those days?
If I may answer, the reason that May was put in there was so that the state would realize that those are significant days. Yes, the flag can be flown every single day, but those dates that are listed under the May is dates that is preferred for, more highly preferred for flying.
I think that's good to have on legislative record, and I don't know if we want to talk offline about whether we want a line in there about that this is not a prohibition by implication. This is not an exhaustive list of days it could be flown. I'll say also there is a day that I can already think that I'd like to add to this list. Is this, Mr. Caswell, is this list sort of a a national standard that goes in every state, or do folks add days as well if they have some day of significance in their community?
Those dates that I put in there are dates of national importance.
Uh-huh. Okay.
There would be no limitation as to our prescribing which days in the state of Alaska.
Okay. Very good. Senator Gray Jackson, I know you have to leave soon. Do you have any questions for the bill sponsor?
Nope. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, great. Senator Bjorkman, do you have any closing remarks before we set the bill aside?
No, thank you very much, Chair Dunbar and Senator Gray Jackson, for hearing the bill today. I appreciate the consideration that these important symbols be given as an official symbol of the state to remember our servicemen and women that have paid the ultimate sacrifice as they were in service to our country or our communities. So thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Bjorkman. Thank you again, Mr. Caswell. We will set the bill aside for further consideration. The Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee will meet next on Tuesday, April 9th. The time is 2:47, and this hearing of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee is now adjourned.